Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, the SNC-Lavalin case is headed to a criminal court.
Justice will do what it's supposed to do independently, determine whether or not there's guilt or innocence in this case, in this charge, which is exactly what politicians should not be interfering with.
Mike Pence arrives in Ottawa as legislation is tabled to implement the new North American Free Trade Deal.
Canada, the U.S., and Mexico are at our most efficient, most secure, and most profitable when we work together. And it's about time we got back to that way of thinking.
And a Senate committee launches an inquiry into the Mark Norman case.
I don't think much will come of it, to be frank. There's no harm in that committee inviting him to turn up, but there are a lot of considerations for him as to whether he's going to turn up.
It's Thursday, May 30th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by National Post columnist John Iveson. Good morning, John.
Morning, Mark.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence is in Ottawa today, and on the agenda, of course, is the North American Free Trade Deal and getting that ratified in Canada and the United States, although I suspect it'll be easier to ratify here than in Washington. But yesterday, Prime Minister Trudeau said that he would raise the issue of abortion rights with the U.S. Vice President. I find that interesting to hear, given that the subject is supposed to be trade and where we have common ground.
Right. I hope that that is not the case. I mean, we've got plenty to talk about as far as trade, as far as the extradition of Madam Meng to the U.S., which is obviously affecting Canadian trade interests in China and our overall relationship with China. To raise an issue completely unrelated, for completely domestic political reasons, would be total fallacy, in my opinion. I mean, have these guys not learned that wagging their finger at a superpower for domestic reasons, or even in the naive hope that the superpower will then see things their way? I mean, this narrative has played itself out time and time again with the Chinese, with Donald Trump. It has never worked yet. In fact, it has backfired spectacularly on multiple occasions. I mean, I think we got a reasonable deal in NAFTA, despite the fact that we try to impose our values, or Trudeau's values, on the environment, on labor laws, on any other hobby horse that Trudeau had. This is just not working. So why not abandon it? We'll see today. But I mean, if he emerges from this thing having lectured Pence, it's clearly going to rile the American vice president, and we're not going to get what we're looking for.
Yeah, and it's very unlikely to change anything in the U.S. because, number one, Mike Pence's views on the issue are clear. I'm not sure he's going to change his mind based on one conversation with Justin Trudeau. And secondly, it's not really his jurisdiction in these developments that are happening at the state level. The vice president
absolutely
has no authority to go in there and do anything about it, right?
Absolutely. So the only reason it's being raised is because Trudeau, when he spoke yesterday, he talked about conservative movements in Canada and elsewhere. Now, you know, the Stephen Harper government had 10 years to bring in a new abortion law. It, not only did it not do so, when certain members of Harper's caucus tried to raise the issue, he tried to clamp down on it. I mean, there were accusations that freedom of speech was being impinged by the tactics that the Harper government was using on its own caucus members who were trying to raise this issue again. She has said he's going to do exactly what Harper did, and that's not raise the issue. So this is a total red herring.
All right, let's turn to SNC-Lavalin, which is back in the news because it appears the case is going to court. Now, before it does, presumably there could still be some type of settlement, but do you think this means that a deferred prosecution agreement is now less likely to happen?
To be honest, I don't think it was ever likely to happen post the resignation of Jody Wilson-Raybould and her departure from the Liberal caucus. I mean, with an election coming up, it was such a red-hot issue that I just don't think politically the Liberals could have brought one in, even though it's pretty clear they're minded to do so. So I think that this now plays out in court, at least until after the election. Maybe it's possible that after the election, if the Liberals are back in with a with a majority government, or even the Conservatives. I mean, I suppose that is a distinct possibility, that if Andrew Scheer becomes Prime Minister, he decides that a DPA is warranted. But at the moment, I think that this is going to play out in court.
Speaking of Jody Wilson-Raybould, she's done a couple of interviews in the last few days since she announced that she would be running as an independent in the fall election. And she says there was no end game. A lot of people have raised the idea that there was some strategy that was at play throughout this whole storyline. She says there wasn't an end game. What do you think about that? And what do you think, if she's thinking a couple of steps ahead, what do you think she might be considering in terms of her future as an independent MP, assuming she overcomes the odds and gets elected in October?
I don't think there ever was an end game. I mean, I think that we're ascribing some kind of Machiavellian calculation on her part that probably was absent. You know, if there was an end game, it would seem to me that somewhere along the line she would want to promote Indigenous rights. Yet it seems to me that what she did to hurt the Liberal Party has set Indigenous rights back and made it more likely that the government less inclined towards Indigenous rights is going to come to power. So I don't think she was playing three-dimensional chess here. I think she's quite naive about the way all these things work. Apparently she's quite surprised that the Liberals are still planning to run against her in Vancouver Granville. So, you know, I mean, we often, you know, we pour over the tea leaves and give people motives that just do not exist. I think she played it by ear the whole way down the line, and now she's going to run as an independent. And if she gets elected, great. And if she doesn't, I guess she'll go do something else.
And what do you think her chances are of getting elected?
You know, normally independent MPs don't stand much chance. I think it's 1 in 3 is the odds. She stands a much better chance just because her name is known. I mean, I think she's probably one of the top 5 name recognition MPs in Canada. But there are huge hurdles for independent MPs. They cannot raise money, or certainly they can't issue tax receipts for donations until after the writ is dropped and they've been certified by Elections Canada. Meanwhile, the Liberal Party candidate in that riding will be able to take donations and issue tax receipts through the riding association, through the party. So the financing odds are stacked against her. I think Jane Philpott is in a really tough fight. I think Jody Wilson-Raybould stands a better chance, but it's still long odds.
All right, let's talk about the Mark Norman case. A Senate committee is saying it's going to investigate the prosecution of Mark Norman. What do you think will come of that, and will we hear from Mark Norman himself during that process?
I don't think much will come of it, to be frank. I mean, there's no harm in that committee inviting him to turn up, but there are a lot of considerations for him as to whether he's going to turn up. I mean, it is an invitation, not a summons, so he can't say no. You know, there are a couple of considerations. One being that I'm sure his legal fight against the government on this is not over. It would seem to me inevitable that he's going to sue. Two, there is an ongoing court case against another individual charged with leaking secrets. And three, that he is subject to Queen's regulations and orders, which forbid members from making public comments that might discredit the forces. So, you know, even though the parliamentary privilege of the committee trumps that, it would make it very hard for him to go back to the military if he appears before a Senate committee and badmouths the Chief of the Defence Staff, for example.
Finally, I wanted to get your take on the news this week, the reports that Mark Carney was being considered by some Liberals as an alternative to Justin Trudeau if things don't go well in this fall's election, that Carney could be recruited to be the next Liberal leader. His name has come up before, of course, but after that story broke a couple of days ago yesterday, Liberal MPs certainly were playing it down and dismissing it as nonsense. Is it even realistic to think in those terms at this point?
Well, I think it speaks more to the psyche of certain Liberal, they call themselves insiders, or they were called insiders. I suspect they're people who have been frozen out of the inner circles who are plotting against Trudeau now. I think it speaks more to the psyche of the nervousness in Liberal ranks than it does about Carney's ambitions. you know, I have a certain amount of insight into Carney's thinking on this, and I know that he's more concerned with what's happening in London than what's happening in Ottawa. He is the governor of the Bank of England. There is about to be a new prime minister in Britain, probably one with views very different to his on Brexit. There will be a new Chancellor of the Exchequer. So he's got 6 months still in that job where it's going to be a very tricky balancing act to handle the Brexit situation. So, as was described to me, he's up to his gills. This Canada, the only thing he's thinking about Canada is what colour to paint his daughter's bedroom when he comes home. and he will come home, and I'm sure he's had thoughts about what to do at that point, but very early days to consider him a runner for a job that's not even open yet.
Yeah.
In my mind, Trudeau is not done yet. I mean, he seems to be written off even by some of his own MPs and insiders. But he is a good campaigner, and campaigns matter. And people haven't really got their heads around Andrew Scheer or Jagmeet Singh yet. Let's talk about this in the fall when people are actually starting to think about the election. Let's see if he's still in line to lose 50 seats at that point.
All right, great stuff, John. Thanks for your insights on all these topics. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
That's John Iveson of the National Post. Now, here's what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In the Globe and Mail, Michael Morden argues politicians say they care about privacy while ignoring privacy law themselves. Morden writes, political parties collect our information directly from Elections Canada or from third parties, and when they canvass door-to-door to get Canadians to sign petitions. They collect this information to decide if we might be persuaded to support them. They use it to figure out exactly what they should or shouldn't say to us, and they do all of this with basically no oversight. Why do parties continue to enjoy this exemption, even amid deepening fears about how we're being watched, measured, and manipulated? In the National Post, Marnie Supkoff argues, the idea of destroying entities like Facebook rather than tempering them with light-handed security measures is idiotic. Supkoff writes, censoring entire social media platforms is not a wise way to curb the spread of disinformation. Will folks be more likely or less likely to believe fake stories about their elected officials after those elected officials cut out major vehicles of free communication? There is nothing democratic or helpful to personal liberty about government banning the exchange of information. In Maclean's, David Mosgrop argues, the next 3 weeks in Parliament will determine whether the campaign trail is an open road for the Liberals or a boulevard of broken dreams. Mosgrop writes, the government has a briefcase full of legislation that has yet to be passed, and they will be under pressure to deliver on those commitments. With an election coming, parliamentarians will amplify the high notes of the legislative process. Getting the remaining bills passed will be political, partisan, and acrimonious. The fate of each piece of government business in the next few weeks will then offer voters a way to assess their government of the last 4 years. Now let's look at what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. As we've already discussed, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence is in Ottawa today. CPAC's Martin Stringer has a look at how the visit is expected to unfold.
Mark, the U.S. Vice President is scheduled to arrive at Ottawa International Airport at about 11 a.m. Eastern. From there, the official motorcade will take him to Parliament Hill, where he will be welcomed at the Mackenzie Tower of the West Block, which has now, of course, replaced the Centre Block. Vice President Pence will sign the official visitor's book, and about just before noon, he'll take part in a photo op with Justin Trudeau in the Prime Minister's office. At about 12:30 Eastern, the U.S. Vice President will have pictures taken in the Cabinet Room with members of the Cabinet before taking part in an enlarged sit-down meeting with the Prime Minister and different ministers. At about 1:45, the two leaders will take part in a bilateral media availability with reporters at the Sir John A. Macdonald Building just across the road from Parliament Hill. It all wraps up with Vice President Pence laying a wreath at the National Cemetery before flying off to Washington.
Thanks, Martin. Also today, Conservative leader Andrew Scheer will be in Trois-Rivières, Quebec, to announce his party's candidate in that riding. Public Services Minister Carla Quattro will make an announcement in Westmount, Quebec. She will also speak at the 2019 CANSEC conference in Ottawa. Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein will make an announcement and speak with the media in Ottawa. He will also appear before the Senate Committee on Social Affairs, Science and Technology. Minister of Innovation Navdeep Bains will take part in a panel discussion at the Data Forum event in Ottawa. Environment Minister Catherine McKenna will make an announcement in Ottawa on behalf of the Minister for Women, Maryam Monsef. Also in Ottawa, Transport Minister Marc Garneau will take part in a demonstration of an autonomous vehicle at the Ottawa L5 Connected and Autonomous Vehicle Test Facilities. Minister of Fisheries Jonathan Wilkinson will be in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador for the official dedication to service ceremony of the first new Coast Guard icebreaker in 25 years, the CCGS Captain Molly Cool. Indigenous Services Minister Seamus O'Regan will visit Grassy Narrows First Nation in Ontario and will later make announcements in Kenora. Minister of Finance Bill Morneau will speak to members of the Milton Chamber of Commerce in Milton, Ontario, and Governor General Julie Payette will visit St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Thursday, May 30th. Tune into Primetime Politics tonight on CPAC for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.